This is actually very closely connected with my third item, understanding and sympathy for others. If you live in a world where everything encourages you to struggle for your own individual interest and success, you are being encouraged to ignore the reality of other points of view, ultimately to ignore the cost or the pain of others. The result may be a world where people are very articulate about their own feelings and pretty illiterate about how they impact on or appear to others. A world of which reality television gives us some alarming glimpses. An economic climate based on nothing but calculations of self-interest, sometimes fed by an amazingly distorted version of Darwinism, doesn't build a habitat for human beings. At best, it builds a sort of fortified box room for paranoiacs, with full electronic services, of course. What is rather encouraging is how few people, faced with this, seem actually to want a society composed of people like this. And despite the alarms occasionally sounded about younger people's fanatical networking through electronic media, my sense is that this often goes in practice with a genuine desire for friendship and isn't in competition with face-to-face contact. We have, to some extent anyway, looked into the abyss where individualism is concerned, and we know that it won't do. There is a moment where every possible agency in civil society needs to reinforce its commitment to a world where thoughtful empathy is a normal aspect of the mature man or woman. And of course, without that, there will be no imaginative life, no thinking what might be different. Now, I don't imagine that what I've sketched out will sound very controversial to this audience, but I do want to underline the fact that it needs defending, and that this is a good and receptive time to defend it. I said that I'd also reflect for a moment on where such a vision came from, because I think that we need to go beyond just taking it for granted and believing that everyone agrees with it and understands what it involves. For myself, the roots are, you won't be surprised to hear, deep in religious vision and commitment. And whether or not you share that, it is important to grasp something of what that commitment has contributed to what we take for granted. From this point of view, the importance of family isn't a sentimental idealising of domestic life or a myth about patriarchy. It is about understanding that you can grow in emotional intelligence and maturity because of the presence of a reality that is unconditionally faithful or dependable. In religious terms, the unconditionality of family love is a faint mirror of the unconditional commitment of a God to be there for us. Similarly, the importance of imaginative life is not a vague belief that we should all have our creative side encouraged, but comes out of the notion that the world we live in is rooted in an infinite life, whose dimensions we shall never get hold of, so that all the reality we encounter is more than it seems. As for the essential character of human mutuality, this connects me, for me specifically, with the Christian belief that we are all dependent on one another's gifts, to the extent that if someone else is damaged or frustrated, offended or oppressed, everyone suffers, everyone's humanity is diminished. I'm not suggesting that without Christian doctrine you can't have the sort of commitments I've described as essential for a three-dimensional humanity. That is obviously not true if you simply look around you. My point is that, now more than ever, we need to be able, in the political and economic context, to spell out with a fair degree of clarity what our commitments are, what kind of human character we want to see. Politics left to managers and economics left to brokers add up to a recipe for social and environmental chaos. We are all a bit shy, understandably so, of making too much of moral commitment in public discourse. We are wary of high-sounding hypocrisy and conscious of the unavoidable plurality of convictions that will exist in a modern society. Yet the truth is that the economic and social order isn't a self-contained affair, separate from actual human dimensions about what is good and desirable. Certain kinds of political and economic decisions have the effect of threatening the possibilities for full humanity in the sense in which I've sketched it. To resist, we need vision, and whether we are individually religious or not, we need all the resources available for strengthening and deepening that vision. Which is why the visible presence of religious people of diverse faiths in the arena of public debate is not a menacing move towards religious tyranny, the imposition of belief systems on an unwilling public, but the opening up of that arena to the best possible range of perspectives to help us push back against barbarism, injustice, and the erosion of the human spirit.